Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm delighted to introduce to you Dr. Laura Ann Copley, a licensed trauma counselor, author, international speaker, and educator. She founded her trauma-informed private practice, Aurora Counseling and Well-Being, located in downtown Harrisonburg, Virginia. There, she leads a team dedicated to providing therapy tailored to individuals, couples, families, and groups. With over two decades of experience, Dr. Copley specializes in healing trauma bonds and fostering post-traumatic growth. She is the host of the podcast, Tough Love with Dr. Laura Copley, and author of Loving You is Hurting Me, where she delves into the intricate dynamics of toxic relationships and the pivotal role of self-trust in trauma recovery. She also trains and is a content creator, providing resources to other counselors on how to become relationship trauma specialists. Beyond her adventures in therapy, speaking, and training around the world, she is a mother to a little girl and a golden retriever on a riverfront farmette overlooking the Blue Ridge Mountains. Dr. Copley's journey from her upbringing in Virginia to her international speaking engagements reflects her commitment to empowering others in their healing journey. Welcome to the show, Dr. Copley. It's great to have you on today.
I'm so glad that we finally were able to meet and get this podcast done. I've been looking forward to meeting you and doing this.
I know. This has been a little bit of tag between the two of us to make it happen.
Yeah, and some magic in the making is how I'm going to word it. It's just magic in the making.
And now we're here and I'm so delighted that I found you. This is so super exciting. As I was sharing with you before the podcast recording started, I've been on a mental health journey myself the last few years and recovering from some things that you help other people recover from. So I'm excited to get into this and see what you have to share to help our laughers maybe deal with some of the things that have happened in their life or someone that they love.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm glad that you're bringing this to the Shenandoah Valley too, and bringing some of these resources and people together. That's awesome.
It is. Yeah. I know. We're a one big happy family, or we need to be.
Just one big cuddle puddle. Yeah.
We need to be. We need more people coming together.
Yes.
So I was doing some Googling. That's how I found you. Mm-hmm.
And you did an excellent job Googling, apparently. That introduction was spot on.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I pride myself in doing some homework before I do these. So thank you very much. And you have a background in trauma.
Yes.
I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit. And then you went on to get an education. And now you're helping other counselors and training them on how to do trauma-informed practices.
I am. Yes. That's the main goal, is trying to spread my wings a little bit and dabble in lots of different areas to get this message out. So whether that is doing my private practice or training other counselors, I also do lots of workshops for the community, conferences. I'm actually going up to DC this weekend and presenting at the Psychotherapy Networker Symposium. And I'm presenting there on this very topic. So this is really good timing. And just different sorts of ways to get the education out there to find whoever needs to hear this message in the channel that they need to hear it.
Yeah. And we need so many wide variety of resources and places we can find information today, because we have a million choices.
We do.
So we have to reach
For better or worse.
Reach across multiple platforms to reach as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a blessing and a curse, I think, at the same time.
Yeah.
So what inspired you to specialize in trauma counseling and become an advocate for this post-traumatic growth?
Yeah. So I'm going back to third grade, where if we're going to go that far back, I changed from wanting to be a dolphin trainer at SeaWorld. And that was the moment, just that so many people don't have, know what they want to do at a particular age, but I knew I wanted to help people in this sort of format. I didn't know if it was counseling or social work or psychiatry or psychology, but I knew I wanted it to look like this. And my own upbringing, of course, played a huge role in understanding this the kind of population that I wanted to work with. So I wanted to understand bonding and how different people that I was seeing growing up, how they bonded to their parents and bonded to friends in different ways, why certain things were easier for some people, harder for others. It was always a curiosity and a fascination for me. And then through my training, I went to JMU for my psychology degree. I went to Eastern Mennonite University, another local university, for my master's degree. And it was there that I started studying attachment to incarcerated parents. So how children responded to parents that were taken away from them, but still alive, which was an interesting dynamic to know. I still have a parent. She is alive. I just don't have her with me. And what that does to our upbringing and what that does and how that changes us and how we attach to others and our friendships and our future romantic partnerships. And then during my PhD studies is when I really got into understanding attachment theory and post-traumatic growth, which is this phenomenon that happens when some of us who have endured a trauma are able to transcend where we would have been if that trauma didn't happen in the first place. And I found that it is relationships that can both traumatize us, but ultimately give us the corrective experiences that we need in order to deeply heal. And then I brought that information into counseling and how I could become that corrective experience to my clients and how I could teach other people in relationships how they can become that corrective experience for their partner. So it almost found me in a really unique way.
Yeah. You mentioned incarcerated parents. Mm-hmm. Is that something you personally experienced?
I did.
Okay.
My mother really struggled with addiction. And there was a big chunk of my life where she was gone. She was incarcerated and in and out of rehab as well. So this strange experience of her being alive but untouchable and the confusion and the disorientation that sort of situation causes. Now, my childhood was lovely. This happened in my early adolescence, teenage years. So I think my early childhood, where I had both of my parents and it was a beautiful childhood, early childhood, I think that also has impacted my trajectory as well. And there are different sorts of milestones that somebody can go through, and relationship ruptures and endings and losses and traumas can impact us at those different stages in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Can do a lot. It can set up a mindset of victimhood.
Sure.
Which is very impactful.
Yeah. And that can pendulum swing. So some of us get that mindset of victimhood and powerlessness.
Right.
And then we will attract relationships that can also give that power that we have. We can give it away. And then we are the powerless ones in relationships. We attract people that claim a lot of power because we have that predisposition. But we can pendulum swing the other way and we can become perfectionists because we don't want other people to see us and our flaws and our vulnerability. So we can pendulum swing the other way and try to get hyper in control as well and put on that mask of everything's fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll come in and I'll save the day. And so we can become the hero in other people's lives because we know darkness and we want to do something about it.
Mm.
But both are trauma imprints. One just looks more socially acceptable than the other, and they tend to be overlooked trauma survivors.
Mm, yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What would you say is the more socially acceptable one? You think being a victim?
I think the one that gets praised more would be, oh gosh, she's such a hard worker.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, oh, she's such a hard worker. She's just an A+ student. Like, I can always rely on her. I think that one gets more positively reinforced and then often overlooked because of that, versus the one that might attract more clear, more obvious abusive relationships where somebody is controlling over them and they have that more powerless stance in their life, that more powerless posturing. I That would be how I would see it. So one has more of that, like, oh, I can see your trauma. It's more obvious to me. Of course you feel that way. And then the other ones who tend to package there, and this was actually my story in my book, Loving You Is Hurting Me. It gets packaged in such a quote unquote pretty way that when people actually hear your story, they are dumbfounded in a kind of way, like, oh, I had no idea. Well, I made it look good. You know, just made it look good.
Everything's fine.
It's fine. Just kidding. What about you? How are you? Not me.
So much has happened. Oh my gosh. I'm sure we're going to get into that. My next question is this trauma bonds that you're talking about, this concept of that. What is a trauma bond?
Yes.
And how does it impact the relationship?
So I come from a different perspective of what the trauma bond is than I think you will see on a lot of in a lot of self-help books. So I come from the perspective that the trauma bond exists on a spectrum, and on the extreme end of the spectrum, you will have those dangerous, abusive, obvious, overt abusive relationships, the ones that we identify as trauma bonded, like Stockholm syndrome and domestic violence, and the fact that it takes, I believe what we have found, that it takes a victim in domestic violence situations 7 times to leave before they're able to leave. So we have those extreme trauma bonding, Stockholm syndrome. I don't know who I am without you, even though I am in danger for my life. And then we have these more mild variations of trauma bonding, where two individuals with two different traumatizing pasts who experience different attachment wounds, which we'll also get into, I'm sure, from childhood, who learned how to love and receive love in maybe some dysfunctional ways, find each other. And they don't know how to experience safety in relationships. They are guided by fear as opposed to trust and safety. So they are bonded by the fear of closeness and bonded by the fear of separation. So how does that even work? So one typically is so afraid of the other one leaving her. And then the other one typically is so afraid of the other one needing too much from him. And I'm using pronouns, but you can exchange, like, flip them around. So one typically can become so flooded and overwhelmed that he shuts down. And the other one can become so desperate and clingy out of fear of being abandoned that they chase. So we are actually creating this triggering chasing dynamic where they're triggering each other. Mm. And that is also a trauma bond. They are bonded by their trauma. So while it might not be this overt abuse, it is grounded in fear and a sense of something being threatening over a foundation of safety and connection and security.
I have questions on this.
What?
Yes, okay. I do.
You have questions.
I do.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so to me, it's a bit obvious, not always, but it can be much more obvious, I think, when there's a battered wife.
Yes.
Or spouse or partner situation.
Absolutely.
Because there's physical evidence.
Absolutely.
A black eye, a broken arm, those kinds of things. With the latter part, that's a bit more, shall we say, covert.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
So if you're in that situation, how do you know you're in that situation? I imagine there are couples that are coming to you for help. That are in that situation, but they don't know that they're in that situation.
No. And even when they come to see me in that first session or two, I don't know, because they're coming and sitting on my sofa because they're bringing it to the table, a certain problem, a way that they communicate or how to handle raising children, or there's something specific that they're coming into. And then it's through several sessions that I notice a pattern of exchanges and how they respond to each other, who often takes the lead, who's often shutting down, how they're responding to stress, how they're reacting to the fear of their partner having a judgment against them. So when I see these more mild variations of trauma bonding, which are very much treatable, when I see these more mild variations of it, that becomes what we focus on in therapy, because that's what is preventing them from actually aligning as a team to address the problem that they're in. They're attacking each other. They're attacking each other as opposed to working on a problem together and attacking the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it playing out based on the situation that they bring in and how they're handling the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I haven't answered it yet. How do people know? I think it's going to first and foremost be when you are relating to your partner, especially when you're relating to your partner, when it comes to something that is stressful, attention. How are you responding to your partner in that moment? Do you feel like he's your teammate? Or do you feel like you're not being enough or doing enough that he or she is attacking you or putting you down for handling something in a certain way?
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes personal. It's not about the problem anymore. It is about your worth, your value, your lovability, and then how we respond in terms of becoming more urgent and heightened and reactive versus shutting down and collapsing and kind of zoning out.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the signs that I would first look for in terms of, oh, we might have a little bit of a trauma bond happening here.
Mm. And how long does it take to break a trauma bond?
You're not going to like this answer, but it depends. nobody likes that answer. It depends on one's level of the current work that they've already done, their level of insight. It depends on if I'm working with the couple and both individuals versus if I'm working on one person. But generally, I break it down to if I have both people, if I'm working with a couple or that individual, if it's individual therapy, if I have them at a place where they can experience empathy for other people and empathy for themselves, if I have them in a place where they can take accountability of their role in creating a cycle these trauma reenactments, if they can see how their past trauma sets the stage for it to reoccur in their life, and if they can self-reflect, if I have those three things, they can actually break it relatively easily in those more mild forms.
Right.
Yeah. But I need those three key ingredients to help with that. If they struggle with one, then we have to work on that thing before we can actually work on the trauma bond.
Mm, I see. And then the couples that come in and recognize that, do you see their relationships restore or move on, or maybe a mix?
Yeah, certainly a mix, but I see the alliance form. And from that place of alliance, they will say, this marriage can work, or we need to go our separate ways. But it's done in a much more cordial way and respectful way. And that's the goal. That's actually the goal of couples work. It's not to like keep the couple together. It's to do what is right for the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might not like that.
Some people might.
But some people might. Yeah, that's true. But some people might. But that's how I approach it. Like you coming into couples therapy, well, we're first not even putting the goal of, are we staying or are we leaving? We're not even doing that in the first few sessions. If that is something that they're battling with, we don't know if we should stay together or not. If that's what they're bringing in, then that's more of a conversation that we're having. But if that's the conversation that we're having, then my role is not to say, we got to make this relationship work, because if we can't, then counseling failed. No, that's not what counseling's for. Counseling is to promote self-awareness and insight and one's ability to do what is right for that person and then on behalf of the relationship.
Mm.
And only that particular couple can come to terms with what is right for that particular couple.
Yeah. So individual. It's yes. Very personal.
It's very personal. It absolutely is.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then you have this aspect of self-trust.
I do.
That plays a role in healing trauma.
Mm-hmm.
That's a relatively new term to me, I must say, the self-trust. Yeah. So where does that come from? What is the definition? What does it mean? Mm-hmm. How does it heal us?
So through all of my work with trauma, since my own individual work with self-healing, and then all the different trauma-informed treatment approaches, this is the ingredient that nobody actually speaks to, but it's what everybody is actually getting at, down to the core of it. And it is, self-trust is one's ability to recognize that I don't have to get it right every single time. It's not about perfection, and it's not even about confidence. What? Right? So when you think about self-trust, a lot of people think, well, it's about like, I trust myself to get it right. I trust myself to make the right decision. I trust myself, so therefore I'm confident. No, that's not what it means. Self-trust is the ability to be able to look at a situation, to look at a trauma, to look at an adversity of some sort, and know this is going to hurt. It makes sense that it hurts. But on the other end of that experience, at the other end, as I descend into that darkness, I know that there is another version of me in the future that resurfaces and has learned something, that has grown, that has healed, that has made something of her life. And self-trust is that ability to know that she exists somewhere in space and time. So even if we get it wrong, even if we do it with shaking limbs and a trembling voice, even if we slip and don't get it right, even if it's done in a flawed way, I trust that I can do that and I can recover and I can heal. And in fact, there might be a better version of me over there somewhere in space and time in the future that I'm going to be as a result of it.
So everything's fine.
Everything's okay.
Yeah. We'll be okay.
We will be okay. And if you can learn to embody that awareness that in somewhere in space and time, there is a variation of you out there that's already okay. And if you can know that, then the descent into the darkness of what we have to do, like doing the hard work of counseling or facing a trauma bonded relationship or even facing our own traumatizing past, it's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm. True.
We can face it and we can do it in a way that we know it's going to be okay.
Right.
And I'm going to be okay. In fact, I might be better. And when we can learn that and embody that, we do the trauma work in a much more effective way.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
It is good stuff. I say that's my key ingredient in trauma healing that I work with people on. And all my clients, they use that word now and just their basic vocabulary is, I really did well with my self-trust today. That's awesome. It's just sort of like if you have somebody that's using the word self-trust, they've probably grabbed my book or something or been to a workshop because I talk about it all the time.
Yeah. That's when they know they've been Dr. Copley'd. Copley'd.
They've been Dr. Copley'd.
That's what I meant to say. That's what I totally meant to say right there.
I wish it was Copley sometimes because cope.
Yeah.
Like to cope with
maybe
something.
That's where like, my subconscious is going with this.
If I was like a counselor, I mean, that would just be such a good like tagline or like, I don't know, something that I can use, but it's not, it's Copley. Copley would be better in terms of a therapist. Help people cope with things.
It'd be perfect. But I hear you though. I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So it's progress over perfection, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Progress over perfection.
It's not about perfection at all.
That's right.
Yeah. Movement. So the enemy of mental health is stagnation.
That's deep.
Yep. The enemy of mental health is stagnation. When you feel stuck, that's when you sink into it, into the sludge. But movement, progress, that's where we start to get that buy-in and we start to feel healthier and we start to get tracking.
I agree. And I love how you said that we need to self-trust and know that somewhere that future self of ours is going to be better on the other side. Mm-hmm. Just like my future self is better on the other side when from bringing this absurdly flavorful gourmet popcorn.
Whoop, there it is.
From our sponsor, Preposterous.
I mean, I think my future self is eating this too. I think mine is, what is this, like heavenly cheesy?
Mm.
I don't even know what this is called, but it looks good.
Mm. It is heavenly cheesy what she creates, but she has sweet flavors too.
Yeah. Well, I got a sweet one too, and I couldn't decide which one to open. So I had to like sit with myself and I did this like meditation. Mm-hmm. Like, what does my inner self want? Sweet or savory? And I chose savory, and I'm glad that I did. It's so good.
I'm down with the savory right now myself. So this is your first time?
Pre-popstress.
Like popcorn, popstress.
Thank you. Oh, is it like popcorn? Okay.
It's exactly like that, Laura.
Oh my gosh.
It's so good, isn't it?
I'm going to save some for my little girl too. She's going to love this.
Oh, she will love it.
She always asks me at the end of the day, like, Mom, did you bring me a treat? Because sometimes they do. And I'm like, this time I'm like, yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I brought you pre-popstress, delicious, heavenly, cheesy popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Totally great.
So good.
And your kernels are grown right here in the Shenandoah Valley.
That's awesome.
Plus, their factory is 100% nut-free.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So, oh, that's awesome.
That's going to be great for your daughter as well.
Yes, it is.
And go ahead. What were
you going to say? Any sort of local business, I love learning about it. So I haven't heard about them before, but now that I have,
mm-hmm.
I grew up in, you said they're in Bridgewater?
They're in Bridgewater.
I grew up in Bridgewater.
Oh, support local.
Yeah. Gotta send some love to our Bridgewater folks.
Definitely pick yourself up some today. You can pick it up as a gift too, because it makes a great gift for literally any occasion, birthdays, anniversaries, corporate gifts, you name it. So
gift giving is also a love language. So if you're finding that you've made a whoopsie in your trauma bonded relationship, just bring a bag of popstress, pre-popstress. And it's a little thing that you can do to help repair after a fight. So how's that?
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. And no one paid her to say that.
Nope, that was all me.
And I agree. And also, bonus laughers, you get a 15% discount when you use promo code LAUGH15. Just go to prepopsterous.com. That's PrePopsterous.com today and use that code and get some of that delicious popcorn today.
Love it.
Me too. Now, Laura, back to you. What is the story of Aurora Counseling and Wellbeing? The name, too, by the way. You have founded this beautiful practice. So
yeah.
Tell us how it came to be.
So it came to be a little bit of an accident because
we are downtown in her lovely practice right now. We're sitting in Aurora Counseling right mm-hmm. across from Court Square.
And the bell tower, the bell tower is going off.
Yeah.
So how did Aurora Counseling come to be? It was an accident. I was actually going to be a tenure track faculty, and I was moving across to Oregon for a job interview. And I had just gotten done. Actually, I was still at the very tail end of getting my PhD at Penn State, and I was exhausted and I was burned out being the perfect. You know, I graduated first in my class, first one to get her dissertation done. I did all that by a year, actually.
Wow.
And so I did all the things. I was part of all the things. And I got a job interview at a university in Oregon. I was going to leave it all. I was going to leave Virginia. This is where I was born and raised. I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start over. And I went to the job interview. Nailed it, of course.
I love
it. And then on the drive back. Yeah, right? Right? But then on the drive back from the airport, it was in the middle of the night, and I was driving back from the airport, and I actually write about this in my book. Actually, there was David Bowie's Hero came on the radio, and I started singing it. We can be heroes just for one day. That, you know, that song? I don't know why it impacted me so much in that moment. But I looked up and there was like just tears streaming down my face. And I looked at that person in the mirror and I said, I don't want this. I don't want to do it. Mm. I don't want academia. I don't want the 10-year track life. I'm already burned out. I'm tired of being burned out. I am exhausted. And not just from my PhD, from everything, from holding up the hero part of me that came and saved the day all the time to hold my family together, to make it look like I'm fine. The fact that my mom's an addict and my dad's not in my life, and she actually ended up overdosing, and they're like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I couldn't hold it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I pulled over on the side of a road at a Sheetz gas station. And I took out my phone and I emailed every college that I had applied for. And I removed myself from the application pool.
Wow.
And yeah. And I went home and I rented an office space on the other side of town, closer to the Costco area, mall area. And I just started to see clients instead. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I still thought maybe I would take a teaching job here, like maybe JMU would hire me part-time or Bridgewater for their psychology program or something. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I knew it wasn't, could not be that intense research one academia tenure life. I didn't want it. Mm-hmm. I needed something slower paced. I needed something that I could be my whole self and not just be one live, eat, breathe, just one thing, because I was so tired and I needed to find myself. So I just opened up Aurora Counseling and Wellbeing, started seeing one client at a time, took off. I had a full caseload in 3 months.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
Had a full case in 3 months because they were like, I think it was like, there's a new girl in town. She's a little bit different. She does things in a different way.
Yeah.
And I approach therapy in a different way. I approach it from a different perspective than I think a lot of counselors do. And a lot, and again, every counselor has their jam and they fit with a certain kind of person and you need to find your match. But my match found me really easily. And Aurora Counseling, then slowly I took on an intern, a resident, and then I took on another counselor. And so now it's a group practice. And we are the primary trauma-informed private practice, group practice in the Shenandoah Valley.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
So there are some terminology that I think people who are seeking trauma-informed therapy should be aware of.
Yes.
Because there are counselors that will say that they have experience in trauma-informed practices, but you get into it and you find out that is not the case. So for those of us that are out there that recognize that they have some trauma in their background and they are starting to think about seeing somebody professionally, what are some key phrases, words, or terminology, experience, credentials, those types of things that they should be looking for in a therapist?
Yes, absolutely. I think first and foremost, there needs to be the acknowledgement that you are not trauma-informed just because you have a master's degree. A master's degree will give you, just because you're licensed with a master's degree, that makes you a generalist. So we are trained in our master's program very well, and we're trained to help with life adjustments, some basic anxiety, basic depression, decision-making, anxiety, like some of the basic human foundational things. But then we need to find our niche. So I would see big red flags for therapists when you're looking at them that say they're a specialist in all the things. No, they are not. No, they are not. And in fact, I would probably just run away really quick. That is not your match. That's not your therapist. A good therapist, a trained therapist, whether it's trauma or teen issues or bipolar or personality disorders, they will represent themselves in one cohesive way. They will talk and represent themselves for their ideal client because that's the one that they're trained to match with. So I would be looking for a individual that also has listed somewhere in their write-up or how they represent themselves in an email or on the phone, what sort of training did you have outside of your master's program? What is your theoretical or therapeutic approach to dealing with trauma? And there's certain ones, somatic experiencing, polyvagal theory, internal family systems. There are different protocols out there, like you talk, EMDR is one of those. You want to look for a specialist that is trained in a particular strategy. And if they don't have one, they're not trauma informed. And if they say, I specialize in trauma and bipolar and personality disorders and teen issues and divorce, and no, you don't. No, you don't. You don't specialize in all those. You might have two. You might have two, maybe three specialties. So mine is relationship work and trauma. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. That's my match. That's my people. That's who I will take on as a client. And if they struggle with addiction, if that's their primary thing, I will refer them to somebody who is an addiction specialist.
I see. Yeah.
Might addiction be a secondary thing to trauma? Sure. Mm-hmm. But that'll be something that we work on as a secondary thing. It's a symptom of the trauma. But if you are in the gut of your addiction, I will refer you to somebody who specializes in that. For example, same thing with eating disorders. Mm-hmm. Eating disorders can be a symptom of some sort of attachment trauma. And we can work on that in a secondary way as a symptom. But if you are in the gut of trying to get through an intense eating disorder, I will refer you to an eating disorder specialist.
So it's the most utmost primary need at the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that most primary need at the time. And my work with trauma also takes on the lens of most of my clients have what we call complex trauma. Mm-hmm. And so it is multidimensional, something reoccurring happened, and they are ready now to do the work and how it's manifesting in how they approach their daily life, how they feel about themselves, and how it's impacting their relationships. So that's my jam right there.
And how does one know if they have complex post-traumatic stress disorder? Mm-hmm.
So complex PTSD is different than a single episode PTSD. So single episode PTSD, which I think up until recently, I would say, is what we really think about. So somebody who's returning from war, PTSD, somebody who maybe had some sort of mugging on the street or something like that. There isn't a single episode that changed how their nervous system operates. That's also PTSD, significant, needs help, needs therapy. Then there's something called complex PTSD. And that is when you were either born into an environment where the way in which you were raised created a pattern of impacting your sense of self and your development and your identity, your sense of lovability, your sense of worth, and how you were raised made you question and in fact maybe taught you not to even to learn your inherent worth. Mm. So that's complex trauma. Another form of complex trauma is I had so many different sorts of single episode trauma. So there was the time that was mugged on the street. There was this abusive relationship. There was the physical abuse from this parent. Lots of single episode things that then come together as this hodgepodge that impacted our nervous system and our sense of self. Mm. So to keep it simple, there's single incident trauma, and then there's complex, which is some sort of reoccurring or multiple incident trauma that we experience throughout our life.
Okay, and a therapist can help you sort all of those things out.
Certainly can, yeah.
If you're not familiar with that at all, and you have a team here now to mm-hmm. help you, mm-hmm. how do you and your team match up clients with the therapist that you have?
So right here at Aurora Counseling, we have different specialties within the trauma umbrella. So I do adults and couples. Then Austin, her specialty is teen issues and young adults. So she works with a lot of teenagers and college students. And then Bree specializes in children and family issues. So when somebody comes in, depending on their age or their kind of relationship, I will sort out who might be the best fit and is best equipped to deal with that particular population through a trauma-informed lens. But regardless, everybody here will be trauma-informed.
That's good. And mm-hmm. then you have a podcast now, Tough Love.
I do.
Or you talk about these
things.
Do
all the things. Let's do all the things.
What kinds of topics would people be able to listen to on your podcast? Where can they find it? Tell us more.
Yep. So Tough Love is this semi-new creation that I do as I can. But the primary goal of Tough Love is to create more bite-sized, so 20 minutes or less, typically, information around different sorts of trauma bonding, toxic relationships, complex trauma, attachment trauma topics. And who it's for individuals who might carry some of these traits or these wounds, and to help them map out where they might see it and what we can do. So it's a very quick, digestible thing that you can, it's so easy to listen to because we're just talking about trauma, no big deal. But in terms of time, in terms of time, it's something that you can pop on and you can listen to for these tidbits around what happens when you get betrayed. What happens with abandonment trauma? What does injustice trauma look like as a culture, as a social group, as an individual? How does that impact us? What are those residual imprints that soaks in our system and plays out in other areas? So they're all different topics related to the kind of potential attachment wound or trauma wound that you have. How to identify it, what symptoms to look for, and maybe step one on what you can do about it.
Mm. Let's say somebody's listening to that podcast and they get what we call triggered. So they have an emotional reaction to something they just listened to and they're not in therapy yet. What would you recommend that they do?
If somebody gets triggered to anything walking around, a song, podcast, something that their friend says, I would say do what your system needs in order to achieve a sense of safety. Because when it comes to being triggered and any sort of trauma response, it is that feeling that we have lost our sense of safety somehow, even if it's emotional. So as we are recreating our ability to trust ourselves, we have to learn how to give ourselves what we need. So if that's the case, it is giving yourself permission to do what you need to do to find a sense of safety and actually honor yourself for the first time, instead of putting a Band-Aid over it, instead of faking it, instead of feeling like you have to push yourself to the end of that conversation or the end of that song or the end of that episode. No, you don't. Do what you need to do and honor what you need to do. Give yourself permission to say, this is too much. I don't like this conversation. Can we change the subject? Or I need to take a step outside. Give yourself permission to change the radio station, put another song on, and don't listen to my podcast in that particular episode. Like do what you need to do. That is trauma-informed treatment for yourself.
Mm. And figuring that out.
Yeah. And knowing what that feels like. Yeah. Yeah. Knowing that feels like, if like, I don't feel good, what would make me feel safe?
I like that a lot. And you've written a book also. Mm-hmm. Loving You Is Hurting Me.
I did. Yes.
And that's had some of your own story in there.
It does.
All right. And what else would we learn from this book?
So Loving You Is Hurting Me is it's my protocol, more or less, on how I work with the trauma bonded client. Now, every client is different. So the order of operations might be different if you saw me face to face versus a book, but I had to start somewhere. So basically, I break down the book in three segments. So segment one is learning your origin story, your why. Why am I like this? Why do I feel this? Why do I attract this? What happened to me that calibrated me to reenact these cycles in my adulthood? So segment one is all about your origin story, and it teaches you how to pull apart the role that you had to take as a child in your family, and how that might influence the role that you had to take in your relationships. So for example, my story as a child and as an adolescent is I had to be the hero of the family. I had a lovely childhood, lots of Disney World, softball, but underneath it all, I had to represent, I had to be the face of my family. I had to be what redeemed them of their unfinished business. So they put a lot of pressure on me. So I had to be the hero. And so everything that I did into adolescence and into adulthood was shaped by this sense of, I can't let anyone down. And it's my job to hold everybody up to make sure everything is okay. It's my job to take care of everybody else. Not everybody has their own individual role in making sure that they're okay. So segment one is how to unravel your origin story. Segment two is the here and now. What's going on in your life now, your relationships now, where we might see some things playing out and some techniques and strategies on how to interrupt those old patterns to form new ones. Mm-hmm. And then segment three is all based on my training in post-traumatic growth. Post-traumatic growth, again, is that phenomenon where certain people who go through trauma and go and descend into the darkness somehow resurface even higher than they would have if the trauma didn't happen to them in the first place. So segment three is about how to not just heal and get back to your status quo, but how to then catapult yourself to a deeper level of meaning and of purpose and of value and empathy for others. Maybe there's an aspect of spirituality to it, if that's right for you. Finding new strengths about yourself. Maybe you have a knack for something that you didn't know that you had. You know how to face your fears in a different way. And you see life through new possibilities. And it's all because you did a certain kind of healing for your trauma. So that's what segment three is about.
That is a lot.
It's a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must have experienced some post-traumatic growth of your own.
I think I have. Yeah.
Yeah. What would you say has been the most meaningful change in your post-traumatic growth for you?
I think it is now seeing the world through the lens of possibility instead of stagnation. Mm. Having that different worldview, just looking at the world through it, it's not over until it's over. Mm. Doesn't matter if you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, like there's always something that you can rebirth and create that can pivot your path from one of old toxic patterns to healthier ones that bring so much purpose and meaning into your life. And so I would say it's now seeing the world through that lens. Like I'm wearing a pair of glasses that sees possibility instead of stagnation. And the undertone of that has a sense of kind of spirituality to it, mm-hmm. a greater spirituality, not really a dogma or a religion, but it has this transcended kind of quality to it that I can only use the word spiritual for. It just has that essence to it that I feel resonates with me in my journey.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have a greater sense of hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the post-traumatic growth, it sounds like to me.
A greater sense of hope and reality that there are an infinite amount of pathways in every single moment that you can choose, and you start to see those pathways open up. Mm-hmm. How you respond, how you react, it's all potential and possibility.
Yeah, I love that. And you are now a mother living on a farmette.
Yeah.
Sounds like in a beautiful place with a beautiful view. Mm-hmm. How do you balance your professional endeavors with motherhood and life on the riverfront farmette?
Yes, I think it's a quest. It's a journey in itself. I don't pretend like I have the balance. I think that is my next endeavor, is finding that balance, because my personality is one where I easily get inspired and I want to do all the things. And while I am capable in terms of my abilities to do all the things, time is my limiting factor. So I think right now I am at a place where I need to learn that I can do what I want, but I can't do everything at the level that I want. And me learning that about myself, I think, is my next journey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
You're going to figure it out.
I'm going to figure it out, because I just put it out there and now I got to. Next time we have this conversation, you're going to ask me that I learned that skill.
That's right.
I'm going to explain how I did it.
Yeah. No, my turn to keep you accountable. Can you share a memorable experience or success story that comes to mind in working with your clients?
Yeah, I And maybe like the first thing that I think about isn't necessarily a particular client, but it is this, it's this general theme that I see sometimes happen. And that is that continued aha desire for that post-traumatic growth. Mm. So people come here to get over the problem that they're coming in with. And then once that problem is healed and they're over it, they want to stick around to do the deep work and then take that journey through the dissension into the depth work and then learn how to resurface and find that post-traumatic growth quality that is about them. So I think that's the inspiring thing is they come and they heal and they meet their goal and they want to do that next level of transcending. And that's just something like when they kind of come back and they're actually kind of excited about counseling as opposed to, oh my God, this is the hard part.
Yeah.
That to me is a signal of their own self-trust that they got it. They got it. And they know they're ready to do the hard thing. And they're almost, they have this looking forward to-ness about the hard thing because they know the hard thing, while it sucks for a certain moment, they leave feeling more integrated, healthier, like they have a mission, like there's possibility, like there's something that they can like do next and there's movement and that makes them feel good.
I like that.
Yeah.
An awesome segue to my next question. What advice would you give to someone who is struggling with the aftermath of trauma, but is hesitant to seek therapy?
I think the first piece would be that makes sense. Mm. The first piece is when it comes to the post aftermath of a trauma, it has this sense of isolation and I don't know who to reach for to bring into that darkness because what a vulnerable and raw place, and not just anybody belongs there. Mm-hmm. And so there is this sense of like, oh my God, like I could start this process. What if I don't like the therapist? What if I don't like the approach? What if it doesn't go anywhere? What if that person doesn't really match with me? Whatever the reason is, that place of isolation and loneliness, and then somehow being able to have the energy and the hope in that darkest moment to have the energy to reach out, it makes sense that there is a moment of like feeling like you need a bit of, like you need a second, like there's a moment of like stillness or stuckness. So I think the first thing is what you're feeling right now makes sense and you're not doing it wrong.
Mm.
That's actually kind of exactly what it feels like. So you're not doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing that I would wonder if therapy is their channel is it's okay to quote unquote date your therapist. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that romantically. I mean, go have a session with one, get a feel for her. Go have a session with another, get a feel for him and pick your therapist. If you go to one and you're like, I don't know. Give it a time or two. And if it doesn't fit, you're not bound and oathed and wearing a ring on your finger for that particular therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So if it doesn't work, you are allowed to move on. In fact, what a powerful trauma-informed healing skill to have to say, this isn't right for me. I think I'm going to try something else. So giving yourself permission to know like, no, I can wait for the person to join me in this darkness. I will wait for the right person.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will go seek that person out and make sure that they're the right person.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've heard a therapist or two tell me this.
Yeah.
That they know that it's not always going to be a fit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really okay. So the therapist isn't taking it personally from what I understand. If they're not quote unquote chosen.
A therapist shouldn't take it personally.
Okay. That's the ideal.
We're all human. We're all human. And there might be some therapists that might have their own work to do that type of rejection would sting. Not your fault, not your problem.
Yeah.
That's their work. You don't have to take care of your therapist. You know? And so like a good therapist will recognize that personality and fit and the relationship and the approach, it all matters. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's somebody out there for our ideal client, and there's somebody out there for the ideal therapist.
That's good. We got a couple more questions for you. This next one is the future of trauma counseling and mental health awareness. What do you see that being like as we move forward, involving, you know, societal norms and challenges specifically?
So something that I am noticing is people are becoming more aware of what trauma-informed treatment is. There's almost a normalization. There's more of an approachability to talking about your trauma. And there's more of information that's out there on different sorts of protocols. So I think there's more information out there for people to get their hands on, for better or worse, right? Because then you have certain people who are actually not trained, they're not educated, and they're putting a lot out on social media because they either have been through something and they're giving out advice, or they might identify as a coach that doesn't actually have trauma-informed training, but they want to work with that population. There's a lot of different things. So we have to be both. We just have to be aware. So the information is out there, and then we want to make sure that the information that we're getting is legitimate. What is their training? What is their background? How long have they been doing this? So I think the future is going to be about trauma-informed care being multifaceted and multidimensional and present in a lot of different avenues. There's going to be more books. There's going to be more workshops that you can get access online. You're going to be able to work with people across state lines for education purposes, kind of learning more. There's going to be, you know, Instagram accounts for legitimate therapists that are out there, like myself. I have one that I put out material that is evidence-based and quality, and I make sure. And then there's others that are out there that's like, what are you doing? Don't do that. So for better or worse, I think trauma-informed treatment and trauma topics are going to be more approachable and reachable. And I would recommend to go that extra mile and make sure that who you're listening to is trained and educated.
Well, we have a lot to look forward to. Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah.
And people seem to be more knowledgeable and aware of the terminology even.
Yes.
For trauma-informed practice, which is really good, because we all have been through
something
in the last 5 years.
All right. Yeah. Right. Not even talking about the cultural trauma from COVID, but absolutely.
Yeah. So as we wrap up here, how best can the laughers stay updated with you and Aurora Counseling on social media or otherwise?
I think my biggest platform is my Instagram. That's where I go to the most. So you can follow me there at Doc Copley, DocCopley. I'm just now getting on TikTok to try to put out some things there, just to kind of get some of this information out in new ways. The primary place is Instagram. You can get my book, Loving You Is Hurting Me. That's available on Amazon. You can also order it off Barnes & Noble and Target. So go online and find the store pretty much that you want to buy your things through. Try Amazon, because I need the reviews.
That's great.
But so that book has been released in the fall, so it's been out a few months now. And there's some upcoming workshops to stay in touch, to stay aware of, that I'll be posting about on my Instagram too.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate this, Dr. Copley.
Thank you so much.
Yes, this has been super delightful chatting it up with you on all things trauma-informed therapy, Aurora Counseling, Loving You Is Hurting Me, the Tough Love Podcast, all the things.
All the things.
I value so much your helpful and wise insights on healing trauma bonds and fostering post-traumatic growth that you've shared with us today. This has been so great. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to next time.
That's right. We could do some cool topics.
We can.
Yes.
Absolutely. We can keep running with this.
Yes. I love it. Laughers, to learn more about what Dr. Copley and Aurora Counseling and Wellbeing can do for you, visit their website at aurora-counseling.com. That's aurora-counseling.com. AURORA-counseling.com. Also, don't forget that discount on Prepopsterous using promo code LAUGH15 at prepopsterous.com. That way you can munch on it when you join me on next week's episode. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.